Good afternoon.
Well, good afternoon.
You are joining We the People Radio for the next 2 hours. My name is Aaron Ryan.
And I'm Bill Cundiff.
And I'm Bob Martin.
And the sun's just a little brighter today.
It is. It is. Yeah. I feel like I've lost 100 pounds.
That's why I could hardly see you over there.
Off my shoulders.
Yeah, you know, the pressure was building. What an election, I tell you what. Even people who thought it was going to go well were surprised, and the people who...
I was shocked, I'll admit.
It was awesome. It was an awesome sight to behold. I learned a new term. Bill and I were sick last week, and so we were still sick Tuesday, but we clawed our way to the election night event. And about 9:30 or 10, after they still hadn't called it, it's like, oh, man. Bill's out in the truck sleeping. He had a fever. And I looked at this lady next to me, and I'm like, why are you still here? She goes, I know, I really need to go. I haven't been feeling good. I'm like, us either. I said, why are you still here? She goes, I have FOMO.
I'm like, FOMO.
I'm like, you have what? She goes, I have FOMO. Fear of missing out. I was like, oh, my gosh, I have FOMO. We were both sure that we were going to walk out the door and get just, like, you know, far enough away from the building. And then here, nobody goes crazy. So, anyway.
Yeah, we didn't miss it.
We learned that we had FOMO. Probably a lot of you did, too. That's why you're still up at midnight. Anyway, it was a lot of fun. And
are you enjoying the protesting? I mean, the whining and the crying
ridiculous.
And the sobbing?
Yeah, let's burn the city down. What a great idea.
Yeah.
Anyway, let's see. You can find us online. We have a lot of archives. We have archives way back into 2010. A lot of good shows, and they are all there commercial free for you. It is at wethepeopleradio.us. We have bios on all of our guests and any stuff we talk about. We list all the links and stuff. So it isn't just listening. Some of it can be reading if you'd like to go do some homework. We've done lots of shows on, political Islam and national security stuff and immigration. That's our second hour today. We'll be talking with the Remembrance Project.
First hour, we're going to talk about...
are we
about,
doing that?
Donald. About Donald's best
Ronald
friend. Ronald McDonald.
All right, you're fired. Phil's fired. Do we have Evan with us?
We did. I convinced him that he...
that he should stay.
Was, in fact, scheduled that he...
that he should stay.
Was, in fact, scheduled with us for this hour.
I know it's confusing. He's a different time. Everybody's a different time zone. But we were psyched about this one. This is our friend Stephen Manfredi who shot me a message like last week and said, "Hey, this will be really good. You want to have this book featured? It is called Putin's Master Plan."
Very timely.
I was going to say, what great timing! And so I have a little info here on Mr. Smith. Evan Roth Smith is a political strategist and communications consultant based in New York City. He's worked for political and private sector clients in all 50 states and more than a dozen countries, including the United Kingdom, South Africa, Israel, Turkey, and Japan. He's advised Democrats, Republicans, and independent campaigns, as well as mayoral, presidential, and prime ministerial candidates around the world. He's been doing all sorts of stuff. And there's more. But I will stop at that point, and he can fill in the blanks. But he has co-authored a book called Putin's Master Plan. And I won't go any farther because it cuts into his time. Evan.
Hi there. Thanks for having me on.
Hey, well, thanks for hanging out with us since it's like late afternoon for you and you probably have better things to do. But
hardly. This is where I want to be.
But yeah.
Oh, right answer.
I planned for it all week. All week. I've just been sitting here waiting. but no, books like this oftentimes don't get the coverage that they should because, you know, well, we don't know a lot about him. It's probably not something we need to know. Give people the pitch. Why do they need to know about this?
Well, you know, it's important, and you're right. The timing couldn't be better. It's so important for people to realize that Putin does have this master plan to break up NATO and other American alliances and roll back American power and global influence and replace it with Russian power and global influence so that he can go about rebuilding his vision of a new Soviet Union or Russian Empire or whatever you want to call it. And connecting the dots on what we see in the headlines from Syria to Ukraine to hacking to Iran to North Korea and even beyond to places like Latin America and Africa, is so important because it's so easy to be overwhelmed by this. But from Putin's perspective, there is an end goal. There is a mission. There is a master plan. And so far, America has been at the mercy of Putin in this regard. And we need to change that, which is why we wrote this book.
Yeah, and it's step by step, and he's moving right down the path, isn't he?
Well, even with just a cursory look, you can see that he's got kind of a gleam in his eye, and he's been on the march while we've been running around like chickens with our heads cut off.
Yes, exactly.
You know, he's been making plans. So let's see, where should we go from here? What things would you like folks to know about the book?
Well, might as well start with Ukraine because that's where Putin started. Although he started, you know, quite a bit before then. But what we've seen in Ukraine is sort of very scary. It's really the first of many in Putin's mind because he does have these real territorial ambitions in Europe. And you know, we saw that when he first invaded Ukraine and when this military intervention in Ukraine started. You know, people said, "Oh, it's." You know, just the Russian community, and it's about the change of government, and it's about the electoral outcome. And next thing we know, Putin's annexing territory and achieving, you know, decades-old goals of Russian nationalists and revanchists. And, you know, it really does signal that he has goals like this all over Europe, in countries like, you know, Estonia and Lithuania, Latvia, potentially even Belarus, Poland. I mean,
He's done a good job in Georgia as well.
Yeah, Georgia was sort of the canary in the coal mine, so to speak, when he sort of poked his nose into their country and saw what he could get away with, and we really did next to nothing about it, and neither did our allies in any meaningful way. And Putin said, "Wow, I really can get away with this stuff." And then Ukraine was next on the list.
Yeah, that's the scary part, is we've kind of taken this weird hands-off, you know, we're spectators on the world
stage.
We're
taking the James Taylor approach.
Yeah, which is a fantastic foreign policy plan. But, okay, so basically at this point he's winning. I mean, his plan is a winning strategy.
It is, and in part that's because of exactly... You know what you're talking about with this hands-off approach of and when you know Obama came into office about 5 months after Putin invaded Georgia, and his first move was to say, well, you know, maybe if I try and make things right, maybe if I show a little friendship towards Putin, if I extend an olive branch, he'll be better behaved. And that was the Russian reset with Hillary Clinton infamously going to Moscow with the button and then the New START treaty, which was this really bad nuclear treaty, frankly, for the United States, and sort of a gift, a sweetheart nuclear deal for Putin. And what Obama thought was, you know, if I give him these concessions and if I treat him, you know, like I respect him and like we can be friendly, maybe he'll be better behaved. And of course, the truth is that he wasn't, and we're seeing the consequences of that.
Yeah,
today.
And Putin plays for keeps, and he looked at that and thought, I'll take this guy
and up the ante.
Yeah, exactly. And he's kept doing it, too. In fact, I was told, as part of writing this book, I traveled all over Europe talking to, you know, these diplomats and these politicians and these people who saw exactly how the war in Ukraine started and how the war in Syria started, people of contacts in Russia, et cetera. And one of the things I was told was that when we backed away from the red line in Syria, and, you know, this famous red line that Obama drew that, you know, if Assad uses chemical weapons in Syria, America will intervene. And when we backed away from that, Putin said, wow, what will they stand up for? And that's was a major part of their decision to go and use force in Ukraine. So they figured if we weren't going to live up to the red line in Syria, we probably wouldn't live up to the Budapest Memorandum to defend Ukrainian territorial integrity. And so they kept rolling.
So what about the idea that it's none of our beeswax and they can do whatever, you know? I mean, it has nothing to do with us and we should butt out. What about that idea?
Right. Well, you know,
it's not really my idea. But
it's fair, of course. You know, it's not like America has any business fighting a war with Russia right now. There's no reason for us to. But what is true is that, you know, there's so much we can do to help these countries just sort of defend themselves. I mean, you know, Ukraine is one of the poorest countries in Europe. And they don't have a modern military, but they've been working tirelessly since the end of the Cold War to dig out from the legacy of Soviet totalitarianism and from, you know, communist economic mismanagement that destroyed their country's economy, killed millions and millions of people through manufactured famines. And they're trying to dig out from that, and they've worked very hard. We made promises to all these freed peoples. We said it's a brave new world at the end of the Cold War. People are going to be democratic. They're going to be prosperous, free markets, trade. Everything's going to work out. And then Putin showed up, invaded their country, and now we won't even, you know, sell them the weapons they're asking for to protect themselves being invaded by a military superpower. So it's sort of, you know, pathetic. We're backing away from the promise of the American vision for the world, that if other countries just behave like us, and that if other countries embrace democracy and free markets and human rights the way we have, then things work out. And if we're not willing to advocate for those values, people like Putin will keep trampling them.
Do you think we need to take a quick break, but when we come back, I need to know, do you think NATO has really done its part to you know, help stem this Russian aggression?
Yeah, there are a lot
aggression.
Of people who don't like NATO.
Let's talk a little bit about that when we come
back. Let's hit a little NATO when we come back. Because there are, you know, people who don't deal with it all the time are like, you know, those guys, I don't know if that's a good deal or not. So let's shine a little light on that for us when we come back. We're chatting with Evan Roth-Smith, author of Putin's Master Plan. And you can find all that great information at wethepeopleradio.us. We've got a link to his book and all the rest of it. Be right back.
When they move into your neighborhood, they take over but good. They want you all body and soul. Then it's just your body. Then they go. What shall we do about them?
That's a night that the lights went out in Georgia. That's a night that they hung an innocent man. Well, don't trust your soul and old backwoods southern lawyer.
The other Georgia. Oh. But they did say Georgia. Good one.
Yeah, we got a song with Georgia in it.
Oh, my gosh. You are listening to We the People. We're here with Evan Roth-Smith, author of Putin's Master Plan. And the master plan is to destroy Europe, divide NATO, and restore Russian power and global influence. Oops.
Yeah.
So, okay, destroying NATO. There'd be a handful of folks that would say, like, ah, good. You know, we think NATO schmato. Why do we need them?
Well, you know, it's true, and it's come up this campaign. You know, Donald Trump talked a lot about, you know, NATO's broken, and the European partners in NATO aren't paying their fair share. And there is, of course, a treaty obligation. You're supposed to pay more than 2% of your GDP, or rather, of your government spending towards defense. And most NATO countries aren't meeting it. And I actually agree with that. You know, a lot of this book is about how NATO is broken and how NATO hasn't done its job in Europe. But where I differ, and my co-author differs with Trump on this, is that the solution isn't to walk away and say, well, this thing isn't working, so let's throw it out. The solution is to recommit and say, well, this thing worked pretty darn well for about 60 years, unprecedented peace and prosperity in Europe and in the United States, by the way. And, you know, it's we think now with Russia about NATO solely as a organization to protect Europe. But the only people who have ever needed NATO, who ever called on NATO to defend us, was the United States after 9/11. You know, we called on our NATO partners to go into Afghanistan with us and track down the Taliban and defeat al-Qaeda. And they showed up. They showed up. And now when they need us, we're saying, yeah, maybe we won't show up. And that's not really a great look. That doesn't inspire confidence. It's also not quite right. And so what we need to do, and what I believe we need to do, is come to the table with some real solutions for improving European security. Things like finishing the NATO missile shield that protects Europe from and America from Iranian and Russian nuclear attack.
Yeah, let's talk about that, because we gave up on that, didn't we? I mean, didn't we walk away from that?
We did. Obama walked away from it shortly after the 2012 election, and it was another one of these giveaways to Putin that was designed to maybe improve relations, because Putin, of course, fought tooth and nail against the missile shield, and Obama said, well, maybe if I give it to him, he won't go around invading countries like he did in Georgia. So he gave it to him, and, you know, what do you know? Putin still went around invading countries. So that's unfinished business that we can finish. And we can tell the Europeans, hey, listen, we'll do things like the missile shield. We'll do things like permanent bases. You just got to pay your fair share and be as committed to this project as we are.
Well, none of these really heavy-handed leaders respect weakness. I mean, that's something we all learned at elementary school. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, weakness is, gee, I'm the oldest of five kids. We learned that at our house. Never show, no, you know, I hear people say, oh, I'm afraid of, actually, I worked with a lady, I'm afraid of bugs. I was like, oh. Getting rid of you is going to be easy.
Bugs in your office.
She had a pest infestation. It was unbelievable. But I mean, that's just—I don't know. Maybe.
Well, it's common sense. With, you know, in our foreign policy, like you stated in your book, with Clinton and Kerry, we have just given away the house, trying to make people happy and
here,
taking this.
If
stance.
You have this, will you like us? Here, if I give you this, will you like us?
Take this, and now we can all be friends. Well, that's not what they respect, and that hasn't worked.
So we've been super. Have we been super naive, or is there some reason we've been doing this, just looking like idiots?
Well, I mean, I think it's what I alluded to is that. I mean, as you said, it's sort of common sense that it wouldn't work, but the people in Washington thought that it would.
Do you think they really did, though? Or was it like they had something else going on and they just made it look like they were kind of being dopes?
I think they were just misguided in that, you know, even though you had people on both sides of the aisle, you know, and remember, we had people, Democrats and Republicans in the 1990s, who were part of winning the Cold War and beating the Soviet Union, who know how to get tough with Russia, who know how to get tough with foreign leaders, begging for stronger foreign policy from Washington.
Right.
This was a bipartisan effort to try and get America to be stronger. And so, you know, the fact that Washington failed to get the message shouldn't really surprise us, since they don't really seem to get the message on just about anything these days.
Yeah, not a lot of message getting going on.
No.
But, okay, so the peace through strength thing seemed to be a great deal, and it was working really well. Did they ever advance? I guess I didn't follow some of that as closely as I know you have. Did they ever advance a reason why that was a bad strategy? You know, I mean, not, you know, by those words, but they just had
the
hopes.
The truth is no. I mean, we heard lead from behind.
Right.
You know, we heard, or however they put it, you know, leading cooperatively, deferring to our partners, all these sort of excuses to abandon American leadership in the world. And that's really what it was. And of course, you know, as you said, Putin is, and all these people like him that we, you know, tend to face down around the world, really do only appreciate strength. And Putin, of course, is a former KGB officer. He was a loyal foot soldier in the Cold War on the Soviet side, but he wasn't, you know, a bureaucrat in the communist government. He wasn't some ideologue in a Russian university, you know, expounding the benefits of communism. He was a field officer in the KGB, going out and getting results and punishing dissidents and tracking down spies. This is a guy who likes power and who likes achieving goals and who knows how to do it. So when we are bad at it, he's going to not take us seriously.
Yeah, and I think that's something that a lot of Americans don't understand about Putin, is he came from a background of power, strength, results, and he liked it. And he wants to go back to that, and he wants results. And like you say, his master plan is we're going to get results.
Well, the other countries, it doesn't really allow them, you know, much option other than to join him. If we're going to, you know, we have a president running around in mom jeans and Kerry's riding a girl's bike, you know, we have just these pictures, you know, because here's Putin, you know, no shirt on a horse, you know, and here we got John Kerry on the girl's bike with the, you know, with the little tassels. And it makes us look like somebody that they shouldn't depend on. I'm guessing. I mean, when you go around Europe, what do they say? It's like, well, you know, we'd like to go with you guys. But...
Well, one of the most fascinating things, and this was, you know, that I heard while I was in Europe, and this was well before, you know, the presidential contest really started, well before Trump came out, well before, you know, even Bernie Sanders, anything like this. And I was in Europe in a non-NATO country, that is, you know, even more worried about security than the European, than the NATO countries, because they have no fallback.
Yeah, they're nowhere.
I was talking to a politician who was a socialist, member of a European soft socialist democratic party, who loved American Democrats, loved Barack Obama, you know, supported them. And he was saying, I can't believe I'm saying this, but I just hope Republicans win the next presidential election.
because
otherwise we're doomed in Europe.
Yeah.
So
what is your take on I know you don't have a crystal ball and
what?
But you've got
That's not what I was told.
What's your prediction? I mean, Trump talked a pretty tough game on NATO. You know, they jumped all over him for having a relationship with Putin, which I'd like to hear your take on that. But what do you think is going to happen with Trump? I mean, do you think he's going to take a stand against Putin?
I sure hope so. I mean, I think anyone who tells you they know what's going to happen with Trump is either lying or Donald Trump.
Yeah, those are the two choices. Well, okay. How about this? Let's make it easier. If Hillary would have been elected, where do you think we would have headed?
I think it would have been a play at a second chance. You know, we always heard that Hillary was the hawk in the Obama White House, right? That she always wanted a little more strength, a little more intervention, a little more America going out and doing stuff. The problem is, when she was tasked with going out and doing stuff like the Russian reset, Putin generally got the better of her. And I really do believe that it would have been an attempt at a second chance, an attempt at redemption for her, as far as Russia was concerned. Maybe a point of personal pride, but again, you know, Putin did not respect Hillary Clinton even a lick. He still thought of her as Bill Clinton's wife, not as a real Secretary of State or anything like that, unfortunately.
Well, I don't think he has a much different opinion of Kerry either, does he?
No.
He's Bill Clinton's
wife? Kerry is a punchline to the Russians.
when your
punishment for them bombing civilians is saying we're no longer going to negotiate for peace, the Russians will go, well, terrific. We didn't want peace in the
first place. Yeah, we weren't really down for that in the first place.
Yeah, I mean, he really is a punchline to them.
Interesting. So do you think we're going to the Cold War again? Do we return there?
It's the best words we have for it, right? I mean, listen, you know, Donald Trump has said he wants things to get better with Russia. Putin said he's open to things getting better. And sort of counterintuitively, the best way that Trump could go about improving the situation with Russia is to be a strong leader who promotes American interests abroad, because that's the only thing that Putin respects, and that's the only thing that'll get Putin to stop, is if he thinks, wow, if I really upset the United States of America, they might do something about it.
Well,
and then they'll be willing to cooperate and play ball.
Well, the countries outside of Russia, the guys that can pick an ally, let's face it, geographically, they're basically tied to Russia. They're right next door.
Mm-hmm.
And if siding with us looks like they're going to, you know, get their head chopped off, it's like, well, that's an easy choice.
It really is. And, you know, that's why it's so damaging when America talks about backing away from NATO, because these little countries that are surrounding Russia are saying, well, if America is talking about abandoning France, which was our ally in the Revolutionary War, of course they don't care about us, you know? Of course they're not going to stick with us if they're talking about walking away from, you know, the United Kingdom or Germany. So it really has a ripple effect when we talk about ending these alliances or not living up to, you know, things like NATO.
Yeah, and in past history, I mean, let's face it, America has always been the go-to country when things really got bad. You know, America did step up and kind of clean things up for them. We've not done that for a long time. And I don't feel there's any respect for our country over there. And I think that's what we need to reinstill in these European nations, is that America is strong, is willing.
That we have the capacity to.
Exactly.
You know, all of our rules have been, now, you know, everybody's got to play nice, and, you know, we've got to have rubber bullets, and I don't know, whatever we're doing. It's just silly. We've had a lot of silliness. We need to take a really quick break. We're going to come right back with our guest, Evan Roth Smith, and his awesome book that we have not had a chance to read yet because we just learned about it 2 days ago. But it is called Putin's Master Plan to Destroy Europe, Divide NATO, and Restore Russian Power and Global Influence. And I think now that we're done fretting about who's going to be the president, we should fret about bigger things. And this would be top on the list. So all the information's on the website, wethepeopleradio.us. Be right back. Give it to them, whatever they want. Yeah. Oh, my gosh. Bob, you're killing it on the music. That's making me laugh. We forgot to warn you, Evan. There's a little goofing off that happens.
I hadn't picked up on it.
Most people figure it out pretty quick, but it's like, what the heck is going on with these guys anyway? Well, you know, I don't know. Let's face it. We've had a lot of frustration over the last 8 years. And without a little bit of goofing off, it's a blood pressure issue, honestly. I was reading a little thing about your book here in the during the break after I got done laughing. Putin's Master Plan is the first comprehensive attempt to systematically explain Putin's global strategy, which could inevitably and inexorably lead to the breakup of the NATO alliance and potentially to war with the West. You contend that the West has no strategy, no plan, no tactics to confront Putin's master plan other than imposing limited sanctions, which have done little to deter hostility. Tell us about that, because I kind of think you're right.
Well, you know, I'd like to think I'm right, too, in that you know, the facts sort of bear out this narrative of, you know, Putin with this sort of singular vision of pushing back against America wherever he can,
sure,
whether it's in Syria or Ukraine or wherever else. And sort of, you know, getting into this buffer zone of pushing American influence, American values, and not just American, but Western values and Western institutions like democracy, like courts of law, like rule of law, like free markets, and just getting them as far away from him as possible, and then moving in with his vision of this sort of autocratic, you know, elite-controlled economy that he, you know, has deployed into these countries that he takes over. And we're seeing that, you know, in the parts of Ukraine now that he's taken control of. The oligarchs are in control. His party and the parties that he condones are in control. And so long as we don't do anything about it, our vision of, you know, the values that the world should operate on will be in decline. And we will very quickly find ourselves very lonely on this continent of ours, surrounded by a world filled with dictators and oligarchs and all sorts of other undesirable individuals.
Sure. And you figure, well, you look at Iran and, you know, the big giveaway to them. Where does that all come mm-hmm. into play with this?
Well, Iran is sort of this masterstroke by Putin, because one of the reasons that Obama struck the New START deal, which was this, you know, sweetheart nuclear deal with Putin, was that Putin got on board in return for the New START deal with the sanctions on Iran. And Obama had paid for it, essentially, by letting the Russians build out their nuclear arsenal, which is exactly what they did. And now here we are, a couple years later, and we've dropped the sanctions on Iran and given Iran a nuclear deal. So what does Putin walk away with? He walks away with a great nuclear deal for his country, Russia. He walks away with a pretty darn good nuclear deal for his ally, Iran. And we walk away with diddly, right? These sanctions that lasted for a couple of years and didn't do all that much. So it's just, you know, it's so frustrating to watch this and watch him get what he wants and just play American diplomats and Western leaders.
One of the things that I think a lot of folks talk about are the sanctions we put against Russia early on with the Ukraine deal and Georgia and all that. What effect did those sanctions have, and did Putin really care?
No, it's inconvenient, but that's it. America doesn't do enough business with Russia to really punish them economically. What we've tried to do is, you know, punish some of their leaders, say, oh, this Russian can't, you know, this guy who's a friend of Putin can't get a visa to come to America.
Yeah.
You know, they don't really mind that. If we were serious about that kind of stuff, then we would start turning over evidence of, you know, the financial interests that Vladimir Putin and his inner circle have around the world. Maybe expose them to some legal action in Europe and the Middle East, things that would actually make them feel the pinch. But the only people who can make the Russians sweat economically are the Europeans. But they're so addicted to Russian oil and gas that they've really struggled to toe a hard line against Putin because they're worried he'll shut their heat off.
Yeah, that's
and that's a real concern.
Oh, yeah, they put themselves in a real bad position having that dependence on...
And he's done it before.
Yeah, yeah.
He did it to Ukraine several times in the mid-2000s. He shut the heat off in all of Ukraine in the middle of winter. And Ukrainian winter is, you know, nothing to sneeze at. And people died.
Wow.
Yeah, and Putin kind of, I don't see him being really moved by that.
Yeah, and the...
He strikes me as the kind of guy that goes, I feel kind of bad about that.
Well, when the price of oil started going down, that really hurt Russia on the world market. But did it really affect them, or did it more affect the countries they were supplying the oil to?
Well, you know, Russia and Putin obviously prefers higher oil prices to lower oil prices because it helps him balance his budget and it helps Russia, you know, make a little more money at home. But just like under the Soviet Union, they're going to pay for bullets before they pay for bread. And so the Russian military has never had problems in the last couple of years finding the money it needs to buy new tanks or buy new jets or upgrade its weapons or, you know, buy new nuclear missiles. And Putin's made sure of that. So, you know, as long as Europe keeps buying their oil at whatever price, and their gas, Putin will keep going the way he's going.
What do we know about the Russian military as opposed to the American military?
Yeah, I was just going to say, what do they think about what we've been doing?
Yeah, I mean, have they really built up their military? Because I mean, I read some articles here not too long ago about how their air force basically is really in disrepair. They can't keep planes in the air due to budgetary restraints. But is that true? I mean, are they really on a war footing, or do they have a ways to go before we need to really be concerned?
Well, you know, they've always had some sort of deep-seated structural issues in their military. When the Soviet Union collapsed, you know, all of their veterans were left without pensions and medical care. It's, you know, the military institutions really degraded very rapidly. And they've, you know, sort of struggled to rebuild that. But the last five or so years, Putin has spent so much money. One would say irresponsibly if it were... You know, any American government that spent this amount of money on the military would be, you know, mocked and thrown out of office. But Putin spent so much money on his military building it up that recently the Pentagon actually did a war game earlier this year just to see what would happen. You know, this is, I guess, what we pay them for, to see what would happen if this kind of stuff popped off. They simulated an all-out war between Russia and the United States. And the results of the war game were inconclusive. They basically didn't really know who would win. And that's sort of not very reassuring.
No, that's pretty frightening.
Especially because we know about 2 years ago, 3 years ago, the result would have been conclusive and we would have won.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Yeah, there's a lot on the horizon. When did you guys start working on this book anyway?
We started working on it, you know, I guess about a year and a half ago. My co-author, Doug Schoen, had written a book prior called The Russia-China Axis, which was about how Russia and China are cooperating to sort of confound American interests and oppose us, defeat us economically as well as militarily. And right after he finished writing that book, Putin invaded Ukraine. And he realized, well, you know, I think there might be another book here just about Russia. And he approached me, and we started writing, and we wanted to get it out before the election, and we just made that.
Yeah, mm-hmm. when did it come out, actually?
It came out late September, last week of September.
Okay.
And wanted it to be out before the election so people could read it and could help inform, you know, some of the challenges that the next president's going to face.
Sure. And now, this is the same Doug Schoen that we see on Fox and whatnot?
It is indeed.
Same guy. Well, I happened to be watching, I don't even remember whose program he was on, but I was watching that interview where they asked him about Hillary, and he was like, yeah, look, I'm not on the team anymore. this could be a constitutional crisis, I believe, were his words. And, I mean, that was one of those where you're like, holy cow. That was the first, that was really the first major, for me, that was the first really bright ray of sun that came through the clouds. I thought, oh my gosh.
Well, I guess, I guess we dodged that bullet in its own way.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's a brave new world we're living in now.
Fascinating. I mean, it's interesting. I think the one thing that we all are realizing is nobody really spent a huge amount of time thinking about what would happen afterward if he won.
No.
You know what I mean? The people who, you know, planned to vote for him or, you know, whatever the thing was, just not voting for Hillary, so they're voting for him, however they lined up on it, I think nobody looked at what would happen on November 9th. We were also focused on November 8th.
I can tell you one person.
Yeah?
I can tell you one person who definitely thought about what would happen if he won, and that's Vladimir Putin.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, and what do you think about that?
He's always got a contingency. He's always you know, ready for whatever we might throw at him. And I'm certain I know he planned for Donald Trump's presidency, because otherwise he wouldn't have had a statement ready to go as soon as Trump won. He wouldn't have had materials prepared and a press conference called and all that stuff. Because Putin likes to carefully plan, you know, everything he says, every public statement. And he was ready to go. So we'll see. I mean, the honest truth is that Trump inherits the presidency facing so many issues here at home and abroad with ISIS and China and Iran and everyone, not just Russia.
Right.
That Putin will probably, you know, make whatever move he's going to make next, and Trump will respond.
Wow. Evan, we got to take a real quick break, but when we come back, talk to us about some specific solutions that we can take to kind of counter the Russian aggression that's happening.
Yeah, what should
happening.
We be looking for if they're doing it right? Here? Good idea, Bill.
Yeah, we'll be back.
That Bill, that's why we have him. He's good at this. Be right back. You're listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. My guess is that wasn't the speech that he had prepared. What did he say anyway? I didn't hear it.
He said, actually, it wasn't far off from that. He said, you know, congratulations, Mr. Trump, and we're ready to improve relations if he's serious about it. I hope we have a, you know, bright, friendly future with the United States of America. We'll see how long that lasts.
So there was a little sucking up?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah. Maybe a little bit.
Yeah, but he had total disdain for Obama. I mean, how many press conferences did we see where he wouldn't even look at him when they were together? I mean, it was comical.
Very interesting. So, what kind of stuff should we watch for if they're going to, you know, if they're actually going to do this correctly in the new administration? What kinds of stuff should they be doing?
Well, I would say number one, far and away, is NATO. And we see what line they take towards NATO. If they moderate, and we kind of saw Trump saying one thing and Pence, his vice president, now our vice president, saying another thing, with Trump saying, we're going to see, maybe we don't need this anymore. The Europeans aren't living up. NATO isn't really useful too much anymore. And then we had Pence saying, we're going to be stronger than ever. We're going to, you know, do what it takes to stop Putin, talking pretty tough. So if this administration winds up pursuing, you know, a strong NATO policy that, as I, you know, talked about earlier, tries to fix things instead of walking away from them, which is what Mike Pence, I believe, would have us do, then we should be in pretty good shape. If we walk away from it and say, you know what, forget this, it's not working, it's broken, goodbye and good luck, then we're in for some trouble.
Who would you like to see as a Secretary of State?
Oh, you know, that's a good question. I've seen a whole bunch of names bounced around. I guess if I had to pick one, it would be Richard Haass, who is a former national security official from the first George Bush administration and then briefly in the second George Bush administration, who's the head of the Council on Foreign Relations.
And he knows what he's doing? And
oh, he most certainly does. He's a very bright guy, and I think he'd make a great Secretary of State.
Interesting. Who'd be the runner-up?
You know, I wish Colin Powell would take the job, but I think he's off the market.
Yeah, I think he shot himself in the foot this last round.
I think he might have. But, you know, Trump will pick who he'll pick, and hopefully it's someone with a level head who can go into rooms with foreign leaders and say, we're gonna fix this mess that just about every country in the world is in right now.
Yeah, and I think that's where a lot of folks don't give Trump much credit is, you know, he's a smart man. He's going to surround himself with folks that know what's going on, that have some experience, because he knows he doesn't have experience in a lot of this stuff, if any of it. But he's got an idea of where we should be going, and I think he'll put people in there that will put
us
forward.
And what do you think about Pence? I mean, I was really excited when he chose Pence as his running mate.
Yeah, I mean, Mike Pence, at least on foreign policy, you know, I'm not from Indiana. I don't know his real track record there too well. But I know in foreign policy, he seems like a reasonable enough guy who cares very deeply about American strengths and American power abroad and making sure that we protect our people and our interests and our national security and live up to our alliances. So it's all for the good.
No mm-hmm. kidding. Well, when you and Doug were working on your book, which way did you guys think it was going to go? Down the Hillary trail.
Oh man, you know, actually, when the book came out in print, one of the first thing I did is I checked the index for Donald Trump because we didn't mention him once in the book. We weren't even thinking about him.
What chapter is Trump in?
Because we were going to ask you that.
He had this great relationship with Putin, but
supposedly
I think we found that really didn't exist.
Interesting.
Yeah, I mean, it's we didn't really know. We didn't really know which way it was going to go. We wrote the book sort of for any president. No matter who they were going to be.
Sure. And so while you were doing your research, what did you find from people, the diplomats and things that you were talking to? Do they see the weakness that has just taken over our country? Or are they kind of freaked out about it like
do they
most
see the,
Americans
the
are?
The Putin, you know, expansionism? I mean, are they pretty much in agreement that this guy is making a march?
The closer to Russia they live, the more terrified they are.
Okay.
And
that makes sense.
When you are on some of these small countries that border Russia, you could feel it. You could feel it in the air, especially these Baltic states, Estonia, Latvia, Lithuania. They're NATO members. They're EU members. They have beautiful, prosperous countries, peaceful countries. They threw off communism. They did everything right. They're democratic. They're, you know, free market. Everything is going beautifully, and they could have it all ripped away from them by Putin overnight if he decided to invade, and they are terrified of that prospect because they don't think we'll do anything about it.
Yeah, because they basically are defenseless without NATO, without the United States, aren't they?
true. Although they are armed to the teeth, they know they'd still be steamrolled.
Oh, sure.
Sure, because there's not a... Yeah, I mean... you could have a great army, but if it's tiny...
Ukraine thought that they were going to stand up to Putin, and that was a joke. I mean...
Well, there was a lot of discussion mm-hmm. with Ukraine that the people in Ukraine really wanted to go with Russia. But I think that was propaganda.
It was. And you know, it's mostly propaganda. There's, of course, a small percentage of the Ukrainian population that likes Russia more than it likes its current government. There's probably a small percentage of the American population that likes Russia more than it likes its current government.
There were moments, but, yes.
Yeah, yeah. But, you know, that's any country.
And, yeah, like, why can't we look like we're large and in charge, huh? Why wouldn't that be okay?
For a change.
Oh, my gosh. Well, Evan, we are down to the last 30 seconds, but we really thank you for taking some time out of your afternoon.
Yeah, great interview. That was some great information on Putin, and it'll be interesting to see what happens in January.
When you guys embark on your next adventure, come back on with us, will you?
Always, anytime. Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks a million. Okay, so we were talking with Evan Roth Smith about Putin's master plan to destroy Europe, divide NATO, and restore Russian power and global influence. And now we're not doing that anymore. Yay! Thanks, Evan. We'll be right back. You're listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. Good afternoon. You are joining the second hour of We the People Radio. You can find all sorts of good stuff, all of our archives, information about sponsorship, contact information, and we love your ideas for shows, by the way. You can find all that at wethepeopleradio.us. And if you want to, you know, prank call Bill, his phone number's there. It's available.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, call me. I won't answer. That's not a problem.
Never answers. It's the worst. You're like your mom. Got the phone off in the glove box. Yeah, it's just for emergency.
I always leave my phone on. I just turned the ringer off. That's all.
Uh-oh.
No, here.
There we go.
Okay.
Oh,
we have Skype. We have phone calls.
You've been on the air the whole time. You're going to have to bear with me.
Oh, and no.
Continue like you're on the air.
Pretend like we're on the air?
Because I have to talk to Maria.
No, no worries.
For a moment. In,
I see what you're saying, but we just can't hear anything in our
stall.
Little...
We're excellent at stalling. Oh, yeah.
Okay. So first hour, we talked about Putin. Vladimir Putin. Yeah. And actually, that book sounds awesome. Putin's Master Plan was written to come out just before the election. And no, Trump is not in the credits. So he's apparently not as big a pals as everybody thought. So this hour, we are going to be chatting with Maria Espinoza from the Remembrance Project.
Remembrance Project.
And also Ruth Johnston Martin, whose late husband was Detective Donald Johnston from the El Monte Police Department. And I do not know the story there on him, but I'm sure that Ruth will tell us when we get her connected. She'll be joining us by phone. Maybe she is connected.
Ruth is connected.
Ruth!
Hi, I'm here, Erin.
Hey, hi.
Hi.
So tell us, how did you get involved with the Remembrance Project? I'm assuming it has something to do with your late husband.
Yes, actually, I have a friend, Agnes Gibney, whose son was murdered by an illegal alien. And my husband, Detective Donald Johnston, and her husband, Mark Gibney, who was the chief of police, worked together. And when she began just participating with the program, she really thought that this would be a good fit for me, seeing what I had been through. And so she made the call, and I've been participating ever since.
Nice, because the Remembrance Project is all about advocating for the families of victims killed by illegal aliens.
Yes. Oh, my goodness. The Remembrance Project has done so much for us as families. You know, the other thing, too, is Mr. Donald Trump really took us under his wing. And as a participant of the Remembrance Project, and after attending meetings with Donald Trump, you know, I can say without a shadow of a doubt that he heard our voices and our concerns about illegal immigration. But Maria Espinoza, who is our director and founder of the Remembrance Project, has just done an amazing job of being an advocate for those of us who've suffered just tremendous loss.
And this is a much larger problem, or a much more widespread problem, maybe, than I think most people realize.
Absolutely. And that's one thing that Maria and her husband, Tim, were taking notice of. They were just looking at just articles out there and just connecting the dots and seeing that there was, it's just a pandemic of just assaults and murders and rapes, all of these horrible things happening to American citizens at the hands of illegal aliens. And so that's basically what caused them to move forward with the vision of the Remembrance Project.
Marie, are you with us?
Yes, can you hear me?
Now we can.
Yes, we can. You're coming in loud and clear.
Wonderful, thank you.
We have people now sprawled all across the western states. We managed to get them all triangulated here.
Okay.
Maria, give us a little overview on why you guys started the Remembrance Project.
I will, and thank you, Aaron, for having me on. And Ruth, thank you so much for reaching out and setting up this interview. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, she called me the day after the election. She's like, hey, we should talk about this. I thought, oh, my gosh, you're right.
Absolutely. We're very excited. And as Ruth mentioned, my husband Tim and I started this in 2009 because there were two officers in Houston who were killed. And one of the stories mentioned there was a lawsuit in Rodney Johnson's killing. And I just couldn't figure out why there was a lawsuit when it was an in-line-of-duty death. So what went wrong, in other words? And that's where we learned about Sanctuary City policies. And we just could not get our heads wrapped around the fact that individuals who were illegally in the country were placed above citizens and had more rights and got away with criminal activity. So naively, I thought that we would be able to bring this to the attention of the correct officials and authorities and say, look, what's going on? How is this happening? And lo and behold, we found out that they already knew, of course. And again, naively, I thought that. And here we are, Aaron, 7 years later, and the families who we work with have testified in their own state houses and also in Congress for several years now. And I know families and mothers who've been testifying for nearly 20 years, and nothing has been done. You know, it's just pointing different at one another, and no one's doing anything, and they don't want to do it. So that's why we're so excited and supportive of what Mr. Trump has said all along, which is enforcing current laws, enforcing the borders, and placing American families first.
But this isn't a problem just with sanctuary cities, is it? I mean, this is nationwide problem.
It is. Well, there are so many sanctuary city policies in effect all across the United States, and that is just the tip of the iceberg. But there is no enforcement either along the border, the exterior, nor the interior, which has to do with enforcing immigration laws and employment laws. So this goes beyond just sanctuary cities, but let's start at the beginning, which is the very best basic and the fundamental duties that our government has, and that is to keep our borders secure, to keep Americans safe, and enforce current laws. We don't want any new bills. We just want the enforcement of current laws, and let's start right there. In fact, if you look at some of the laws like Kate's Law, you know, that was a stronger sentence on illegal aliens re-entering. That's just sort of the gist of it. But if we're not enforcing current laws, Aaron, then why are we wasting our time in trying to make those laws tougher?
Exactly. Let's make a whole bunch of new ones while we blow off the ones that are there.
Yeah, we're not enforcing the laws we have.
I am guessing that when Donald Trump kind of came on the scene and made the illegal immigration situation that just hit the world like a ton of bricks. I bet you guys freaked out.
Absolutely. I remember exactly where I was when we were talking to different families and saying, You know, we can support his words as the Remembrance Project is a nonprofit organization. We can certainly support and ask for current laws till the cows come in, I say. We can testify according to that, and it just is the very basics. It's unbelievable that we have to ask and testify and demand over and over and over for current laws to be enforced. So, you know, Mr. Trump and was telling the truth. He said that Mexico isn't sending their very best. And it is true that another element that has nothing to do with the Remembrance Project. However, Tim and I realized quickly through our research and looking for the murders across the United States, we expanded that from just Texas. We also found that child molestation was a big problem in that illegal alien demographic. There were so many illegal aliens who were already in jail, who had been were in jail because of child molestation, and each of them had 3, 4, 6 children that they had molested. And I just can't, again, can't fathom what is taking place and our officials because of the open border group, special interest lobbyists, because they have the ear and the vote of the politician instead of the citizenry like those politicians are supposed to represent.
Sure. And we need to take a really quick break, but when we come back, I'd like you to talk about the media's role in all this, because there's a reason that people opposed him and called him a racist and everything. And I'd venture to guess, because I know we interviewed you guys a year and a half ago, and learned about your project, spoke with Jamil Shaw's dad. And most people just don't even realize how widespread this is.
Yes.
So hopefully we start this new adventure here in with a new presidency, with people getting their information out, people like you guys who have actual facts. You're listening to We the People Radio. We will be right back with Ruth and Maria from the Remembrance Project. You're listening to We the People Radio.
Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
Well, you filled up my head with so many lies. You twisted my heart till something snapped inside. I'd like to give it one more try, but my give a damn's busted.
It's a good theme song for you guys.
You're back with We the People Radio. We're chatting with Maria and Ruth. Ruth, you've been awfully quiet.
Well, you know, I'm listening to what Maria is saying, and absolutely correct. I mean, this is not a victimless crime, illegal immigration. You know, there are many who are suffering from this lawlessness across this beautiful country. There's a lot of pain out there. And because of my participation with the Remembrance Project, I've personally spoken to parents, spouses, siblings, and other family members who have lost loved ones at the hands of illegal aliens. And now, you know, we're dealing with the refugees that are being brought in from countries who have known animosity toward the American way of life. So this is a serious situation. It involves our national security. And for once, we have a president-elect who is going to do everything in his power to place American lives first. So this is a good time for America.
And
I hope and pray that those who are out there protesting will realize that it's going to strengthen this nation. It's going to provide us the national security that we deserve as a people, to know that when we send our families out, that they will be safe. You know, when I kissed my husband goodbye on that fateful day, he was working as a police officer, and while responding to an incident at a bank, an individual who was here illegally pointed a gun at him. And at that moment, an innocent bystander walked right in between them. This was an elderly man. And my husband, having regard for this innocent man's life, took that moment to push him out of direct line of fire. And it was at that point that my husband was shot in the neck. And it severed his vocal cord. And, you know, when my husband fell to the ground, he was paralyzed. And we were married for just 5 months when this took place.
Oh, wow.
And we spent the better portion of the first year in a hospital. And, you know, I was just beyond elated when I heard him say three words to me for the first time after fighting and fighting to regain his voice. He just said, "I love you." And he began to fight for everything that he could. He regained the voice, regained his hands and arms, and he was given an opportunity to apply for a disability retirement, but he rejected it. You know, the brave man that he was, he returned to work. But his health just continued to deteriorate. I don't know if you're aware of spinal cord injuries, but there's so many complications to them. And I was trained to essentially be his nurse, provide all the care for him at home. But when he went back to work, he wore, you know, external catheters because his bladder was affected. And individuals with spinal cord injuries are 20 times greater, more susceptible of getting bladder cancer. And unfortunately, he was one of those, and it's a very rare form of cancer. And but he worked for 10 years back in the department from a wheelchair. And in that time, you know, this brave man, he received numerous awards, you know, following the shooting, you know, which include the Medal of Valor, Congressional Award, Silver Star for Bravery, Legion of Honor Award. He received recognition from the California State Legislature, State Hero of the Year by the Senate, and also an award that was created in my late husband's honor, and that was the Don Johnston Man of Courage Award. But back to the Remembrance Project. I can't tell you how much I appreciate what Maria is doing for us. You know, because for many, you just feel isolated. You feel as if these individuals that are in this country, they have more rights than we do. You know, and as part of this Remembrance Project, I've had an opportunity to speak to parents and spouses, siblings, and other family members who've lost loved ones at the hands of illegal aliens and who are now dealing with just the insult to injury of there not being a national program to assist them through this nightmare that they're enduring. And what Maria has set forth is a national program. And this national program is it's going to provide so much for these families who have been just absolutely devastated by these crimes committed on them and their loved ones. And this program, it will assist them with burial expenses, medical and counseling costs. It'll help the families to navigate through the court system that it so often shows more consideration for the criminal illegal alien than it does the victimized family. And, you know, I was talking to someone about all the national programs that help illegal aliens navigate to coming to America and just being able to live. And there isn't a national program for those of us who have suffered at the hands of these illegal aliens. So I commend and just kudos all the way for Maria and Tim for providing us with an organization that assists us through all this red tape and just allows our voices to be heard. Thank you, Maria.
No, thank you, Ruth.
Thanks, Ruth, for giving us that. The big question that I have in all this is, what happened to the person who actually shot your husband?
Well,
did anything actually happen to him?
Yes. During the multiple hearings, we were not able to go because my husband was fighting for his life in the hospital. However, my husband was out of the hospital when the sentencing hearing took place. We did attend that. It was the first time I saw the man that shot my husband. And he was given 17.4 years in prison. And our life, there was so much taken from us, you know, the ability to have children, the family that we so wanted, just having to take care of my husband, the man who, my best friend, you know, the love of my life, like a child, you know, taking care of medical needs that you never expected. We just thought 17 years, and we knew that he would probably be released much sooner than that. But after the trial, the prosecutor told us that he was in the country illegally and that he would most likely face deportation hearings at the completion of his sentence. But before that, any of that took place, this man committed suicide. He hung himself in his cell. And, you know, my husband and I wanted to feel relief. We wanted to feel happy about this, but, you know, we couldn't. You know, these are two lives that were completely destroyed, you know, lives that were from two worlds apart. But all of this could have been avoided, you know, had this individual not be allowed to be in this country because of his illegal status. So that's why, you know, we're so thankful, you know, that Mr. Trump has listened to our concerns. And he is the only candidate that actually accepted the invitation to speak to Remembrance families. And so because of that, we know that he's going to do everything in his everything possible to correct this horrible scenario that is playing out in so many American lives.
Is just curious, did this individual have a previous criminal record? And the reason I ask that is
that happens a lot.
Yeah, and like I say, the reason I ask that is Trump has made it pretty clear that you know, they're all afraid that you know, families are going to get deported, blah, blah, blah. But he's really going after the criminal element.
Correct.
on the deportation side first. And that's going to be a huge job in itself. But what about this individual? Was he a criminal?
Well, we tried to obtain information, but it was very protected. The only thing that we were ever told about this individual was at the hearing, the sentencing hearing. And that was that he was here illegally. Had he committed crimes in the past, we were unaware of. And see, that's one of the biggest problems with everything that's taking place. Just a night ago, I spoke to an Orange County sheriff, and he was telling us that, you know, we have separate cells for illegal aliens. And we, you know, they have more rights than American citizens. We're not allowed to speak to them. I mean, they are just basically protected. And so, you know, as far as knowing, as far as, you know, the reports that are out, the articles that are out on murders and crimes, they don't release the status of the criminal. And that, I hope, changes, because I think America truly needs to know what we're up against. I believe that, you know, protecting them by not releasing this information about their background does no one any good.
No, I would agree to that.
No, that'll just and the thing is, this is really common sense. You guys are advocating for something that's very common sense, but okay, for real, this time when we come back, we need to talk about how the media spins it. I'm actually going to make a note, not my strong suit, but we're going to make a note. We'll come right back in a couple of minutes. You're listening to We the People Radio. We're here with Maria Espinoza. Sorry. Okay, I'm going to start coughing. So we're here with Ruth as well, with the Remembrance Project. See you right 2 minutes.
Why you look so sad? The tears are in your eyes. Come on and come to me now. Don't be ashamed to cry. Let me see you through, 'cause I've seen the dark side too. When the night falls on you, you don't know what to do. Nothing you confess could make me love you less. I'll stand by you. I'll stand by you. Won't let nobody hurt. I'm gonna stand by you.
Even if our music breaks up a little, we're still going to stand by you. You're listening to We the People. We're here with Ruth Johnston Martin and Maria Espinoza with the Remembrance Project. Okay, so Maria, talk to us about what you guys see happening in the media and how people are being really just misinformed.
Yes, and again, it takes Mr. Trump to bring that to the nation's attention and to basically pull the curtain back and expose the media. And I think you might have seen that there was a letter from the New York Times that said they were basically going to try and be more truthful and forthcoming with the news so that to the people. So, you know, I don't believe that, but at least, you know, and that says a lot, Aaron, where a media outlet like the New York Times is coming out and saying, hey, you know, we haven't been very honest in the past, but we're going to try a little bit harder. You know, and it's just an outrage. But I think it also speaks to the fact that maybe their subscriptions have been a little bit lower. You know, why buy a paper or go to their online newspaper and subscribe when you're not going to get the truth? You know, so I remain very skeptical about that. But, you know, the media is to blame for this as well. And that's one reason why that we created the Stolen Lives Quilt banners, which memorializes Americans who've been killed. But also it paints the picture for the public. And mm-hmm. we sort of do the media's job in connecting the dots for Americans so they know that in Houston, Texas, there's killings by illegal aliens, they're not reported. Or a small town in Conroe, north of here, another killing by an illegal alien. But guess what? It only stays local, and many times they don't even mention that the person should not have been in the country to begin with. So that's why we created the Stolen Lives Quilt banners. And many times, you know, it's a huge help, Aaron, because we have the memorial shirts as well, because where else are we going to get the information? You know,
sure.
When Donald Trump didn't come, you know, wasn't around, and, you know, for 7 years we've been saying this, and people have been working on this issue and trying to sound the alarm for decades.
So for all those people that think that that the illegal aliens are all just coming here for a better life, and they're just coming here to work, and this idea that there's a criminal element, how big is it? Do you have some numbers for people?
No, I'm sorry. What was that question? Many people are here illegally?
No, I mean, do you have a sense of how many of the people flowing across our border are actually criminals or become criminals?
Well, honestly, if you're entering a country without permission, that's illegally entering a country, that is wrong in itself. That is a criminal act, period. You know, I don't know anyone. I mean, would you go into another country without your passport? I don't think any of us would. We wouldn't even think of it. But so, you know, that's the problem. But look at the result and how much of a tragedy it is to a family. And we know so many, you know, in Ruth's case is exactly what we're talking about. Ruth and her husband and her entire family would have been spared this horrible tragedy that Ruth has affected Ruth personally for the rest of her life. You know, the fact that they wanted children, they wanted a family, and weren't able to have a child because someone should not have been here in the country, and here they were in this situation. You know, and some people try to argue the fact that, well, Americans commit crime. Yes, we're not saying that. You know, they're not listening to us, and they want to twist what we say into their own little agenda. But ours is, like you said, it's common sense, Aaron. And if we uphold current laws and follow the immigration and employment laws, we're going a long way for Americans to have a nicer life. You know, let's think about Americans. We have over 94 million Americans jobless right now. Look mm-hmm. at our national debt, $20 trillion. How are we going to get out of it? But yet, these lobbyists continue to push open borders and hiring illegal aliens. and we still help other countries with U.S. foreign aid, you know, we've got a huge problem. If we don't kind of bring it back home, we're not going to dig ourselves out of it, beginning with enforcing current laws. And you can see the mayhem that's on the street right now. It's out of hand.
Sure.
And
in California, and we're ready to release a bunch of prisoners again, thanks to voters.
Right.
Have chosen to
exactly.
do the prison, you know, release again. Tell me this. You have a link on your, well, you have a tab, actually, on your website, America First Latinos. So
yes.
This isn't just a bunch of, you know, white people who hate immigrants, blah, 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 blah. Like,
well, I'm not white.
I know. I wasn't going to bring up your brownness, but, you know, but that's what always happens is, you know, it's just a bunch of, I mean, what you heard on Tuesday was that they had no idea there were so many bigots in the country. Oh, my gosh. And they all voted. It's like, how mental do you have to be to think that that people who come here, who actually legally come to this country for a better life and for opportunity, would not want to stand and defend the country they live in?
No, absolutely. And again, we can point back to the media. It's so very difficult and has been difficult for Hispanics, Latinos, to be interviewed and be heard on television, to where we can say we don't agree with that. You know, hey, we're jumping up and down, waving our arms, doing everything that we can, you know, doing somersaults to get the attention
of
the media.
But that just blows their whole deal.
It ruins
their entire program.
Right, right. Then they can't say that and point to this certain agenda and be able to say that if you believe in upholding current laws, then you're a racist.
Yeah.
But the America First Latinos initiative, we started last year because there was so much of a demand for Latinos to be heard. And there are so many. You can see, if the media would show it, I guess Mr. Trump is probably the one who would print the pictures, you know, upload the photos of, you know, Latinos for Trump, you know, Asians for Trump. You have so many. If you go to a Trump rally, this is what I say, it looks like a rock concert. You could not figure out where you were. Don't you think, Ruth? If you
Absolutely.
Looked out into the audience, you
it
would
was,
not know where that you were at a political event. You know, this is about America and Americans being heard. And finally, I feel the relief from so many Americans and everyone, you know, we're all Americans. You know, white, brown, black, purple, pink, whatever. We're all Americans, and that's what we want. And Ruth, wouldn't you agree that if you go to a rally, you don't know where you are?
It was such an eclectic event. I heard Spanish being spoken there. There were Chinese for Trump supporters there speaking their dialect. It was just, it was so amazing to see just all of these different races that were there. We're all American citizens. But, you know, listen, Florida was delivered to Trump. There were many Cuban Americans who voted for Mr. Trump because they believe in law and order. They believe that just like them, people should enter this country legally. And Texas, you know, there are many, many Latinos, many Mexican Americans who voted for Donald Trump. Same thing. Mm-hmm. So this whole thing of Trump supporters being racist and all of this other garbage that's being put out there couldn't be further from the truth. We are all American citizens. Soy Latina. I'm Latin myself. And I am absolutely in support of law and order. Without it, it's anarchy. And that is what we're seeing on the streets today.
Yes.
So, you know, as far as I'm concerned, we selected the right candidate. And I am so, I just can't say it enough, President-elect Trump.
Well, how did you guys become connected with him during the campaign? Did they already know about you guys?
He stumbled across us when he heard, I think it was Jamil Shah on the radio.
Ah.
And that was as soon as Mr. Trump announced and said those words. You know, we had all of our members and families say to go on the radio and comment and post and certainly defend Mr. Trump's words. We could support his words, but of course we could not endorse him. Personally, the family members can endorse, and personally I can as well, but you know, it's not what we were, that's not our focus. Our focus was, we have someone who is speaking the truth, and media, you know, the left media, and it really most all media were attacking him, and you know, this is what we've been saying all along, that is true. You know, so I believe that's how Mr. Trump first came across Jamil Shah. Then they found the Remembrance Project and these families who were connected with us and we work with. And he asked for a meeting in California. We had five families there in California in Beverly Hills. It wasn't publicized. The media did not broadcast it. But Mr. Trump met with them privately and he took them out in front of the podium, and they told exactly what happened to their families. And I guess about 3 months later is when he brought them on stage during a speech, a national stage in Beaumont, Texas. And then from there, it's just been, he has been excellent this entire 18 months.
That's great. Well, you guys know better than most people what the, you know, the downside of the illegal immigrants here, especially the people who are here for, well, they've all broken the law to get here, but the people who are definitely here for the wrong reasons and the wrong motives.
Right, and, right, exactly.
But it has been a long haul, you know, just, ugh, you know, 2 years of, you know, you're a racist, you're a bigot, you're a hater, blah, blah, blah. It must be actually kind of funny for you, though.
It's mind-boggling, and I think Ruth can attest to this as well. I mean, I'm constantly looking at articles that come up, and they're talking about him racist and all, and I just don't get it. Like, there's nothing about being a racist when you're having to do with enforcing current laws and enforcing our borders and placing the citizens of this country first.
Right, and the whole idea that no Latino, you know, people support him and no immigrants support him. And you guys are like, wait,
yeah,
what about us?
Again, gets back to the whole media thing, you know.
Exactly.
What are you going to believe?
The spin was in high speed. I linked an article to our website that I hope people will take the time to read. It was very good. Came out of CBS News, and it was entitled The Unbearable Smugness of the Press with Presidential Election 2016. And it's written by a CBS news guy about the press. Mm.
And it was probably, and how wrong they were.
Well, it was probably the most honest assessment of how they got to the conclusions they did and how they went through the election. But it was very much like your New York Times thing. You know, we're going to have to start doing a little more actual reporting. And there were like 1,600 comments after this thing. And every single one of them started with who, what, where, when, why. You know? I mean, welcome to journalism 101.
You know, and maybe it's me, but I just wouldn't trust them because I just really believe they want to build their readership.
Right. I'm not going to subscribe, but I thought, you know, it's interesting, though, that they are actually they've been put in such a box. Now they actually have to say something. Otherwise, it just really looks bad.
Well, they've turned the whole thing into an entertainment industry and not a news reporting agency.
Well, they were going to tell us what to do, and we were going to go do it.
Yeah, yeah. It's all about opinion and not news. Yeah.
Well, they think the cities run the country.
Well, they kind of do.
So the Electoral College that everybody kind of hates, hooray for them.
Well, thanks to WikiLeaks, we now know that
some of the news stations
you know, we're asking what questions to ask the candidates, you know, candidate Trump. We saw that there was coercion between some of the news stations and the DNC. So, I mean, there is no way of trying to skirt this issue.
Right. Donna Brazil and her whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
We'll be right back. We've got to take one more quick break. And we're chatting with Maria and Ruth from the Remembrance Project. And if you don't know about them, please go to the Remembrance Project. Oh, I'm going to get it wrong. .org, ladies?
The Remembrance Project.org.
.org. Okay, good. I was right. And it's linked on our website, wethepeopleradio.us.
Good
Yeah, we're going to start doing that again. What a great idea. Looking out for number one. All right, so we have about 5 minutes. What have we not covered, ladies? What do people need to know?
One thing that I just wanted to bring up about the news media itself, when we attended the Phoenix, Arizona rally, we were brought out, some of the families were brought out the first part of the rally, and we were all pretty shocked when the media scrubbed us from the feed of the rally itself. When Mr. Trump saw what they had done, he insisted that we be brought back out during his important speech and retell a portion of our stories. He wanted to make sure that the American public knew what was going on. And because he did that, he allowed our voices to be heard across this great nation. And the public now knows the truth, you know, about our loved ones being killed by criminals in this country illegally. The public now knows that our laws are not being enforced and our borders are not being protected. And the American public now knows that our loved ones' tragic deaths, they were absolutely preventable. But because of the current administration, their unwillingness to enforce the laws and protect our borders, they are gone. And so, you know, I saw the media through different lenses this time around. I was so shocked at their absolute push to suppress our stories and our voices. And once again, I go back to being very grateful for the Remembrance Project and also for Mr. Trump, who was willing to listen and allow our voices to be heard. And, you know, at the end of the day, his policies, they are going to strengthen this country. And I know deep in my heart that those right now that are protesting, they too will benefit from these policies. But I think that down the road, they're going to wake up and realize the world didn't end. It didn't end. We're a stronger place. We're a safer place. There are better jobs. There are higher wages, you know, all the way around. But I think that this media has done so much to cast a shadow on Mr. Trump, President-elect Trump. But, you know, the truth will be revealed in itself as he begins to lead this nation. And I believe he will successfully lead this nation to her former glory days. We will see greatness.
Yes, absolutely. And, Aaron, I want to thank you and your station and everyone who works with you for having us on, because it's so very important. And I want to give our website out and ask people to join us, you know, in your areas at theremembranceproject.org. You can sign up and just get involved and help spread the message. And Ruth, thank you so very much. Ruth has been a blessing to our organization. And you, as you can tell, she's a believer, a Christian woman, and she and her husband have just been a blessing. And we're very fortunate with the Remembrance Project to have them with us. Unfortunately, it's because of her husband was killed by an illegal alien, her first husband, I'll make that clear. I'm so glad that you're with us, Ruth. We love you, Maria. We appreciate you, and, you know, we pray for you. So thank you for praying for us and President-elect Mr. Trump as well.
Yeah, it's a horrible club to become part of. I mean, it's good it's good you all have each other, but I hope your numbers stop growing.
Absolutely. But with that said, I just want to reach out to all of you who are listening who have possibly been affected by crimes committed by illegal aliens. I just want you to know that we are here for you. And if you need someone to talk to, if you need someone to circle the wagon around you, just go to our www.theremembranceproject.org, and you have a friend in us, and we will help see you through this nightmare that you're going through.
As only people who have lived it can do. Thank you, ladies. We appreciate you. And I do hope people go to your site. Your site has a lot of great information, theremembranceproject.org, and how people can participate, how they could spread the word, and interview information. Get you on their local stations. There's nothing like hearing from the people in real life, you know?
Thank you. God bless you.
Well, we'll talk to you guys later once all this stuff starts unfolding. We'll see where we're headed. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Aaron. Thank you, Maria, for giving us this opportunity, and thank you for the vision that you had to just create this incredible organization, the Remembrance Project. God bless you, Maria.
Absolutely. You're welcome. God bless you, too, Ruth. Take care.
See you guys next
week.
Bye,
Aaron.
You can find everything for us online. The archive will be up shortly. WeThePeopleRadio.us.
Thanks, everybody. Let's roll, America. The good Lord's on our side.